This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Considerations, many, many considerations, things to look at. One of the articles in the New York Times that came to my attention today was about body piercing and tattoos, and that's what we'll be talking today on the program. Body piercings. What's going on? What are all these things sticking out of people's skin all of a sudden, and what are they doing there? Well, people see it differently. And I want to examine it because I think it's a reflection of where we are and what our society is doing and what it's about and where we're growing to and evolving to. Get this. In Great Britain, 10% of the adult population has a non-earlobe body piercing. What? What? 2,000, that's 10% of the adult population. One out of every 10 people has got a needle stuck in somewhere other than their ear. That sounds like an enormous number. In the studio with me, Stephanie Roth, who's a specialist in working with young adolescents and young adults. Stephanie, is that surprising to you?
That number is a little bit surprising.
Yeah, okay, now here's one. In a 2002 report in the Mayo Clinic, found that 51% of the college students surveyed had some sort of piercing, not including the ears. Is that what you find? You find that 51% of the people that you talk to nowadays? Well, okay, so this is quite a question here, because body piercing, It's always kind of interesting to look back, and many people will go back and say, ah, but we've been doing body piercing since we were, you know, natives and since we grew up. Most of the exotic sounding names for different types of piercings, you know, they have, and they think that it may be they're rediscovering a venerable and ancient rite of passage of some sort. Well, you know, on some way they're right. But on some way, they're not right. And some way, they're absolutely even more right than they thought. And the reason I bring this to your attention is because of one of the radical perceptions of Stephanie Roth, who is preparing a paper on this. Stephanie said to me something very interesting about people and the way that they – how she perceives from the work that she's been doing this body piercing has evolved and what it means. Stephanie, go ahead. Your turn.
Body piercing is an intensification of bodily sensation through the pain reception center of the brain. It's a way to wake up your senses. It's a way, you know, piercing, some of them take a very long time to heal, so they hurt for longer than the initial piercing.
One of the studies I saw was that the piercing itself is one part and the healing is another part, and the healing very often is very painful.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true.
But they're both part of it. It's like the piercing itself. I mean, the piercing is a tremendous shot of adrenaline and endorphins, right?
Yes.
I know people who pierce themselves. Is that what some
piercing,
people...
A lot of adolescents and young adults, more and more I see people piercing themselves.
And piercing others,
absolutely.
And so they pierce, and there's a big pain. And then we're going to talk later about genital piercing. I mean, it would make me cringe, but we have to talk about it because it's very common nowadays, you know?
It is, among women and men.
Yeah, yeah. So this whole idea of piercing is, number one, there's one stage. And number two, of course, a lot of people, and I'm not going to be the person to caution everybody, but everything I did when I did research on genital piercing and piercing in general – as opposed to genital, I found that everybody who wrote an article was warning about the infection. So I'm not going to go there. We'll let it enough to be said that if it's not sterile equipment, there could be infection. But infection doesn't have to be bad, according to you, because if there's a prolonged healing process, the pain of the healing process may be welcomed.
Sure. And also the idea of healing, the idea of looking in the mirror and turning the piercing, and it hurts each time, and using the right materials. And it's very, very methodical. You have to clean it in the shower. You have to use a different soap with many piercings. Many piercings on different parts of your bodies require different materials to clean them with. So it becomes a whole procedure which you need to learn about and you need to own.
Give me an example of that. What kind of soaps would you have? I mean, isn't Dr. Brunner's soap good for everything? Is this?
They often say soaps with scents, any scents, natural or not, can create infection. So you want to avoid anything that has a scent to it.
Okay, any additives? You're looking for pure kind of Castile soap?
Yes.
Something really simple, something as simple as possible, okay?
Yes.
All right. And because they're afraid that anything could be – but you – all right. All right, good. So they say there's one kind – if you have a silver piercing, you have to wash it differently than a gold piercing?
Well, different parts of your body, let's say your ear, you are not supposed to use Neosporin for whatever reason, even though the piercing gets tight and becomes hard to turn. You're not supposed to use Neosporin, I've heard.
I'm sure there's a good medical reason for that, because probably Neosporin goes up into your ears somewhere and gets into your brain. You get neurosponic brain. No, I'm serious. It probably is a reason why.
Oh, absolutely. I would imagine, of course, there's a reason.
You know, so if you're not supposed to use that antibacterial on your ear in other places.
You can, supposedly.
But, you know, Stephanie, you did something else when I saw you preparing this information. You have a belief about piercing that's radical. I mean, it really is radical. It's something not just about the common perception of it's about pain and it's about having a marking. There's something you see here. What do you see here?
Well, Armand, I specialize in young adults, and I see that the primary problem among young adults and adolescents today is a lack of self-esteem, and even more so, a lack of being heard, a lack of feeling like they know themselves, feeling as though they can identify themselves. And I believe that a piercing is a way of reclaiming a certain body part that you feel was taken away from you as a child, where there are certain things you were not allowed to hear. So you pierce your ears in various places because you want to reclaim your ears. You want to be heard and you want to be able to be a part of things and hear.
Wow, hold on a second now. That's wonderfully Freudian. I want to go into this for a second. You're saying that there are piercings that are chosen for different parts of the body that are representative of a lost something was appropriated.
Something was appropriated.
So somebody who puts piercings on their lips, for example, are saying their speech, they were not allowed to say certain things, right? And now all the attention comes to their lips. It's like, pay attention to what I have to say.
Yeah, I have to say something important.
And that's what my piercing of my lips is. What I say is important. And what was taken away was your voice as a child. You know, you weren't allowed to speak. You weren't allowed to. That's a very interesting concept. I wonder how many people we could get to test to find out how valid this is. I understand the perception. You think piercing of the eyes has to do with seeing and what a person's allowed to perceive?
Yes, and allowed to, you know, watch television even. Many children, their parents watch things they are not allowed to see, so they get shut out of the room. There's fighting going on, and they're not allowed to watch it.
So one of the things that children very often, what we do to children frequently, is we tell them that reality is not reality, and we don't let them see reality. So we don't want them to see the very facts that prove whatever we're trying to teach them is not true. For example, if you want to engage in fair play and you want to teach your child fair play, and yet you're trying to cheat the post office, and the child brings it to your attention, you want the child not to see it. And there are so many things that people do to children. Yesterday, somebody came into my office, and she used the expression Nazi, you know, about herself. She said, a part of me is like this. And when she broke down the word, it was very interesting. She said, not see. Is that Nazi meant to her, not see? And it was like an interesting description of that entire culture, what that was about. It was about not seeing. See, so when you're taught not to see as a child, something in you may say unconsciously, I think I'm going to be able to see. I think I'm going to validate everything I see, so therefore eye piercings. Well, let's take it a little step further. What about other piercings? Do you think that genital piercings is related to something disowned or misappropriated?
I think that genital piercing is often a way to reclaim a body part that was lost from you. So people who were abused may pierce their genitals and say, I own this part of my body. This is mine. I want to reawaken the sensation that's there.
So
that was taken
purposes,
away from
yes.
me, because a lot of people disassociate during sex and when they were abused. So this is another way to connect to your body and own it.
Fascinating. Fascinating. So two things take place. First of all, many people, especially women who feel themselves, that they had to in some way make themselves numb against sensation because somebody paid too much attention to their genitals, whether it be their mother or their father, or whatever the attention was paid might have been negative, like just may have been judgment against them, or you might have been born into a family where they wanted you to be a boy and not a girl. Whatever it is, you disowned your genitals, and when you disowned it, in a way, you go kind of numb. And what you're saying is that a piercing does two things. You get to re-own your genitals. Now, I'm alive, this is mine, and you increase blood flow to that place by creating something that adds additional stimulation, which is, I guess, usually irritation, you know, of some sort. If you have a piece of metal running through you in some way, it can't be just pure pleasure. It can't be like a feathery sensation. It's got to be more like an irritation. And that would increase the pleasure as well. So I wonder for men, you know, there are men who do genital piercings, and it's amazing. I mean, I won't get graphic on it, but they do everything from testicles to penises to, I wonder if there's that same thing. I'm trying to own this very thing. I'm trying to claim it back. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. We're talking about piercings, body piercings. We're also going to talk about tattoos, and I'm talking with Stephanie Roth, who specializes in helping people, young people, young adults, and children find some sense of identity.
I think another important piercing to look at is belly button piercing, which, if you look at it, that's where your umbilical cord comes from. This is a way to reconnect with your mother. Were you not paid enough attention to as a child? Did you feel you want, you know, maybe you have too many siblings, maybe your mother's just busy, but you want to reconnect with your mother? And I think that belly button piercings are one of the most common piercings seen. And we're also talking about a nation where there's single-parent households. Are you reconnecting with something that you feel was lost or taken away from you? And that is such a spot where that's your umbilical cord. That is where you come from. That is where you were born.
How brave of you. How brave of you to dare have a connected theory to early childhood when everybody would say, ah, you're just being too psychological. You know, but I mean, the thing is, Stephanie, the reason you stepped into this world was because you believe in the human mind and you believe that there are unconscious things going on in the human mind. Do you know what a Prince Albert is? Did you ever hear of a Prince Albert?
Yes.
What is it?
It's a genital piercing on a male.
That's what it's called. And you know where it came from?
It came from a prince in England?
Yeah, it came from Prince Albert, believe it or not. And it came from, there is supposed to be some, that was where it originally started, with Prince Albert, you know. And there's all kinds of names they have for different kinds. You know, different names for different piercings. What are they called?
That's the only one that I am familiar with that doesn't specify a body part. That's the only, you know, there's many piercings. The belly button, for example, as far as I'm aware, it's referred to as the belly button piercing. In a woman's genitals, there's different areas. Many people, I've heard young adults say that they never knew different parts of their genitals till they went to get a piercing, and they said, oh, I wanted this piercing. And then the piercer turns around and says, well, that's actually not your clitoris. This is your hood. This is, you know, different parts. And it's, and in a way, educational. It's fascinating that people don't know their bodies.
When Stern and Angel were two researchers who did a lot of research on women who were people who got piercings. And she said that they said that people can and do use piercing to mark events, you know, so then they have births, deaths, reclaiming the body after childbirth. And when they did more research into it, is what struck them the most is that each pierce seemed to have a story to tell. Each pierce has a story, and all of them seem to do it for a reason of which, get this, fashion is the least important. Now, we would all think, oh, a piercing's about fashion. It's about design. It's about style. A funny phenomenon happens to women or people who have tongue piercings, for example. You know, you would think, what is a tongue piercing about? Is it for sexual pleasure? That's one idea. But I was reading a number of people who wrote in who talked about the importance of the tongue piercing. The tongue piercing is a silent way of playing all the time with some sensation. It's like it takes the place of chewing gum, even more. Can you talk about it?
Yes, I believe many people, again, Freudian, have an oral fixation, chewing gum, picking their nails, biting their nails. And the tongue piercing is a secret way to constantly stimulate your mouth and fixate orally. And no one needs to know what's going on in there. And you'll see some people chew on their tongue rings, and you can see it. It's very visible. And some people, their mouths are always closed and their tongue's moving. And unless you were really looking, you wouldn't know that. And it's a way to awaken that sense as well. And it's a way to occupy yourself.
I remember I once had a loose tooth. And the dentist said, leave it alone. It's going to heal. Don't play with it. No chance. Are you kidding? How could you not play with a loose tooth in your mouth? There it was. Of course, I lost it. How could you not? How could you leave it alone? There are a lot of risks involved, of course, and people have decided to go through it. But it seems to be that people, once they have the body piercing, they don't want to give it up. In 1992, a 4,000-year-old body of a tattooed man was discovered on a glacier in the Austrian border, and historical research has shown that Egyptians identified tattooing with fertility and nobility 4,000 BC. Now, this is tattooing. Tattoo, which comes from the Tahitian word tatau, T-A-T-A-U, which means to mark. They're relatively permanent marks or designs on the skin, right? Mm-hmm. An electric needle is used. And a tattoo is another way that people make a statement about themselves. Now, here's a question I have, Stephanie. Does a person, when they're getting a tattoo, think to themselves, I'm going to live with this for the rest of my life, and I won't be able to get rid of it, and it's going to fade and turn into a kind of a gray eventually, and when I get fat, it's going to lose all its lines, and it's going to stretch from one place to another. And so I'm making this choice despite that.
Many of the young people I work with walk in a tattoo shop, get a tattoo on an impulse.
So it's likely impulsive.
Very often, I find, with young adults, it's impulsive.
Just got to do it because everybody's doing it. I'm going to have a little bit of a tattoo on my shoulder, and that's all it's going to be. I'm going to have something on my butt. That's what it's going to be. I'm going to have a little cute mark on my ankle.
Tattooing is also another way to mark events.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And many people can tell you the story of the day that they got the tattoo. Many young people, I should say. The story of the day they got the tattoo, the events that took place that day. And it's not linked to something such as childbirth.
Okay, but what about future think? Now, I'm willing to bet that the impulse that, I'm going along with your theory, the impulse that makes a person walk off the street into a tattoo parlor and get a tattoo, although nowadays it's pretty difficult to do because you have to get an appointment like 6 months in advance. And are they have ready tattoos and not ready tattoos?
Yes. The good shops supposedly are the ones who need an appointment at the definite ones with history, with a background, with better artists.
Okay. So
who are more strict with their rules and regulations and often would turn away a young person.
Because they want you to have thought this out? You see, I don't see why tattooees have not sued the butt off all the tattoo parlors. I mean, so many people regret it. I know one young man. He had a tattoo, and he had a tattoo on his arm, and he put a woman's name on his arm, right? He divorced a woman. He was getting married to somebody else. He gouged that thing out of his arm. He put in there – there is such an ugly scar where he had to cut down a half inch into his skin to get rid of this thing. I know they remove it by acid. I know they remove it by gouging.
Laser.
Laser, too. But it's all – none of it is good for you. I mean, all of it is like a very deep penetrating thing. So it's a person, can we generally say a person with tattoos is a person who does not consider future consequences in life? They just don't consider the consequences of their behaviors. Maybe if you're hiring somebody and you want that person to be really dependable, it may not be the best choice to hire somebody who has a lot of tattoos because they are, in effect, somebody who's saying, well, you know, I just felt like doing it, so I did it. But they're not considering consequences of their behavior, which is – and they have every right not to consider consequences of their behavior. Youth, you know, children shouldn't have to consider consequences of their behavior. But if you're going to hook up with somebody, if you're going to be with somebody who chooses this style, well, then that's a pretty free style of life and living, you know?
I think especially true of young adults who have tattoos that are somewhat meaningless, we'll say, not ones that mark an event, not ones. You know, it's just a design. It's just a drawing that doesn't hold any meaning to them specifically. But they liked a butterfly, so they put a butterfly on their
Well, what if it has stomach. Meaning? Like if you write on your chest, Tony, you know, because you're in love with Tony. That has meaning.
Yes, this is true. That does have meaning.
Right. And now Tony's gone.
Well, that would say a lot about a person. That person's very idealistic, right?
What do you mean?
Well, they think that Tony's sticking around forever, so they're going to put that on their chest.
They're going to make a symbol on their arms. And, you know, in a way, it's a funny thing. In a way, a tattoo is a way of intimidating the other person not to leave. Because, hey, I owed you. I have you on my arm. You belong to me. But you're right. There is a certain idealism with it. And I think there's something else to it as well. I think there is – I think it's funny thinking. Even though I know, and I am not against – remember, 10%, maybe 30% of the adult population at this point have body piercings or tattoos. I'm not sitting in judgment. I'm just saying, yeah, but you're not the kind of guy who plans for the future. You're not the kind of guy who's got money in the bank and has a Keo plan. It's not your style. You're not the kind of person who considers the effect of getting a Hummer, you know, as your vehicle. You know, it's not – you just consider, this is what I want now. This is what I'm going to do now. How cool. Now, I have seen people who do elaborate painting of the skin, which lasts as much as a week, that costs from $1,000 to $10,000. The movie stars are doing it. Where you get a body art on you that's just a fantastic, beautiful thing, which, you know, could draw attention if you wanted to draw attention. And movie stars are always trying to draw attention because that's important. But it's also easily gotten rid of. That may be the way to go, but I don't think it's going to cut it because I think what you're saying is true. A body piercing or a tattoo is a way of giving yourself a feeling. A feeling. Now, what's the connection between tattoos and cutting? Well, first of all, let's explain to people what cutting is.
Cutting is a phenomenon many people participate in. It's the cutting, literally, of the skin with something people often use razors. The cutting of the skin to induce feeling. To wake yourself up from being numb.
So people who cut themselves, and there are many people around, and I'm sure you've run into a lot of patients who do it. It's usually a thing of, I know it's of adolescence is where it starts.
Yes.
They cut themselves in hidden parts. They cut themselves on the legs, on the upper legs, you know, so it's not seen.
Yes.
In their arms where it's not seen. And they actually literally watch themselves being cut, and they like to watch the blood appear as they're cutting themselves.
Many people can describe to you what it looks like. I've heard very descriptive what it looks like, the first bubble of blood, and then as you go down, and it's very...
And for some people, it's the only way that they could get out of their mind. You see, a lot of it is I can't stand my mind, I can't stand my thinking, I've got to get outside of myself. And this is a way to step outside of yourself. You know, this is a way to kind of get away from whatever pain, misery, or depression you're feeling. Now, keep in mind that once you do something to hurt yourself, you're going to have a whole bunch of physical chemistry. You're going to have dopamine, endorphins, and a whole bunch of other things flooding your body that give you a calm sense. So it's kind of reinforcing. But treatment for people who do cutting is very severe and very important, because it does tend to grow. You do tend to do more and more.
It becomes an addiction, because you're addicted to the sensation you get with the dopamine levels and the release of endorphins, and very similar to when people become addicted to drugs. They are chasing that high.
Chasing that sensation. Amazing. This is Armand DeMille. I'm with Stephanie Roth, who's a specialist in working with young adults. We've been talking about tattooing, and we're talking about piercing. I'm sure you have some comments about this, which we'll take directly after our break today. So the telephone number is 212-209-2900. The basic essence of what you're saying, Stephanie, is that people want to be seen, people want to be heard, people want to feel these three things: see me, hear me, feel me. And I want to feel. I've gone numb, you know. Many young people feel like they've just become a product of their performance society, that they're doing everything, they're going to the right schools, they're getting awards for everything, you know, they get celebrated for everything they do. And that children no longer have a sense, or young people don't have a sense of themselves. They're not allowed to take risks, as we learned the other day with the woman who wrote A Nation of Wimps, where she said, you know, that people don't take risks anymore, and children aren't encouraged to risk. So they get no sense of internal identity. They just get a sense of identity from what their parents tell them. And then one of two things happen. Either they become completely conformist, or they become rebellious. And when they become rebellious, when they kind of assert themselves in some way, one of the ways that's being done is not just with their behaviors, but what they do with themselves. Piercings, tattoos. Now, piercings are reversible. Is that true?
Yes, although they do leave a scar.
A scar and a hole.
And a hole that often, depending on the body part, closes up, but you will always see that there was something there, a small scar.
Unlike tattoos, which are a lot more permanent.
A lot more permanent.
Is it true that all tattoos eventually fade? I mean, I've never seen one that's been on a long time that's vibrant in color.
I believe that it's true that all tattoos eventually fade. I mean, you lose skin cells, you know, or you go in the sun and they say it fades. Some people get the same tattoo recolored often, and they're living the same experience they had the first time they got that exact tattoo. And so they keep it vibrant by going to the tattoo shop once every year or so to get it redone.
Hey, well, I'd like to hear your calls about it. There are a lot of people with a lot of opinions one way or another. I'd like to hear from you because, you know, it's hard not to be just sitting in judgment at it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. It'll be very short. Remember, children want to be seen, heard, and they want to have the right to feel. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Tommy, Tommy, Tommy.
Tommy, can you hear me? Just exactly what it was about. This is Armand DeMille with you. With the positive mind, Stephanie Roth in the studio with me today. Stephanie Roth is a psychotherapist, licensed clinical social worker, specializes in working with young adults and children, helping them find some kind of an identity. We've been talking about piercing and we've been talking about tattooing. 212-209-2900. Our newest way of your connecting with us, not only through telephone call, because sometimes the phones are jammed, you can, we now have active email available in the studio. So we are getting some email responses and comments from people as we do the show. People who feel better not being on the air but sending us email, armand@brainlink, BRAINLINK.com. So I could read those comments to you as well. 212-209-2900, but just in case any of you have been standing by, let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. There we go. Okay, here comes one. Okay, here it is. Oh, boy, you always seem to hit the issues that are going to stir the hornet's nest. It's on the health side of things. Don't forget that a lot of these things disqualify people from donating blood for a good portion of time, if not forever. The more people that get these, the more that the already strained blood supply will be strained even more. So there's somebody who sits in judgment with it. Okay, here's another one that says from someone else. I remember a rock festival years ago when a girl came to the clinic with a navel infected due to pierced performance performed right there at the festival. The clinic nurse said there were plenty of them happening right there. Eventually, the fad will die away and be replaced by another one just as ludicrous. See, people really feel judgment about it. Body piercings. Here's another one. I have 9 piercings, 2 of which are not in my ears. My advice for anyone thinking about a piercing, I would include earlobes in the statement, is to check out www.safepiercing.org. In order to be a certified practitioner from the APP, the Association of Professional Piercers. My gosh. One must have a good amount of training and uphold safety standards. So, anyway, more. 212-209-2900. Let's see if we have a caller on the line. I could read more, but I also have another place I want to go with you today. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air. Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hi, Armand. This is Ralph.
Hello, Ralph. How are you?
Good.
Man who has painted himself.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I am. I thought it was very interesting. I don't know if I agree with the statement that people that get tattoos wouldn't be necessarily future planners.
Well, good. Ralph, you better than anyone else. First of all, Ralph is a very sensible man. Ralph is a very strong guy. Ralph has a lot of tattoos. His wife loves his tattoos.
Oh, yeah.
His tattoos have become an active part of their lovemaking, which is kind of an interesting thing. Do you two collude on what you're going to get, or do you actually get the tattoo and then show her later?
It's funny because a couple of my tattoos, and I think that I've probably gotten quite a lot more since last time I saw you. She usually knows generally what I'll be going in for, but sometimes I'll surprise her with something. Like, recently on my forearm, I got a sun with, 2 seagulls, flying, and the artist that does the work is very, very competent. And this 2 seagulls were representative of myself and her, like in a kind of a freedom sort of scenario, you know. And she was really blown away by that. I mean, it brought her to tears when she saw it.
So tell me, Ralph, what do you consider about this one thing about the future planning, right? So when Ralph, who is built like a muscular hunk, eventually gets flabby, right? And I know you're going to say you're not going to do that, but but let's say when it eventually happens and then suddenly the 2 seagulls have turned into pigeons.
A couple of pterodactyls.
Right. Right. What do you think?
Well, you know, I guess I understand what you're saying because I don't really think as much about that they're going to be that. I mean, I enjoy them very much right now. They're representative of a certain time in my life. I feel like it's more or less like making any big decision. You know, I do consider getting a tattoo a big decision. I don't take it lightly. But it's along the lines of, let's say, if I decide I don't want to have children, I mean, I make that decision now with a, you know, competent, rational mind. And if I come to have some regret for it down the road, well, then so be it, because I made this decision with, you know, my all my faculties. So, you know, that's just something that I'm going to live with. I try to keep them in as best shape as I can. But, yeah, I mean, like anything, I mean, we're all going to get flabby and have pterodactyls if we have seagulls, you know.
Ralph, thanks for calling in.
Sure, Armand. Nice talking to you.
212-209-2900. Fine, fine man. Yes, well painted. Well painted. I mean, just incredible to see so much of his body covered. 212-209-2900. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there. I hear that you're there. You got to turn down your radio.
Hello?
Yes, yes, yes. Turn down your radio.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question. I thought it was really interesting how you associated cutting with piercings. And I was wondering, I have a child who cuts, and she's talked about it. She has identified it as exactly what you said. She wanted to feel something. She also said she realized that it sort of started having a life of its own. And I related that whole thing to being, you know, as like an addiction. She still has some, you know, scars that are visible. And I've said to her on her arms, I've asked her, I've offered to her, are you finished with that? Is that something you're done with? If you want laser. And I think she wants the scars. There's something about having them that she wants. And I really, you know, she won't go to a therapist. I've really tried to get her to go to someone. She does talk to me, but I was just wondering what you thought of that, that she still has these scars and she's still somehow wants to show them in a way.
Yes, in a way, showing the scars is kind of evidence. Stephanie, let me ask Stephanie Roth here. You've worked with people who do a lot of cutting. What do you think the pride of the scars is?
It's evidence that you did feel something once. It's evidence that you want to look and say, I can feel.
It's like a reminder that you could feel, yeah.
It's very painful, though. I imagine that's very painful.
To whom?
Certainly painful to me.
Right, so for you to watch, to see, to hear, and not feel as though you can do anything about it. It's very,
yes,
very painful.
Yes, it is.
So what happens to you with your daughter when you see that she shows you something that comes from a deep pathology? Now, when we have somebody cutting, we have them in danger. You know, and we in the world of psychiatry consider this to be a dangerous sign, you know, because it's not just cutting. It's cutting escalates, and it's something that we've seen mostly. So there you are, powerless to do anything about it. You can't get her medication. You can't get her, you know, I mean, there must be something you could do. Stephanie?
What is your name?
My name is Jane.
Jane, okay. Well, Jane, I do think that what you said about cutting taking on a life of its own, people do feel very similar about an addiction that becomes an addiction. It's something that she probably feels she can no longer control either. So now
she says she doesn't do it anymore. I've asked her.
I understand, but if you see any signs of it, reach out for some help around it, Jane, because it's...
How do you get someone to go somewhere when they want, you know, to talk about when they don't want to?
You go with them. You go with them. First, you go yourself, number one. You go to a therapist yourself, and you talk to a therapist yourself about your feelings and clear out your feelings. And then you invite them to go with you. Very often, a person knows they're being spoken about. They're happy to go with you. We have many kids who come. You know, because they're willing to come because their parents are talking about them and they have a voice of their own. So that's one. Another is to treat it as if it is an addiction. And so when you go to a place like Al-Anon or someplace where you learn how to deal with yourself, you see, I have a sense that there's something missing in your own sense of yourself, that there's a part of you that has been sacrificed as well. You know, and I think there's a piece of you that needs attention. Very often we found, you know, not that it's the parent's fault, but when the parent gets healthier, the child gets healthier without having to do anything.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure, sure. Hey, let's go to another subject for a moment. I want to talk about something else. I know we must have a lot of calls on the line, but I want to talk about addiction because she was just talking about addiction. You know, an addiction creates a lot of moral wreckage. People who become addicted to alcohol and other drugs, they lie, they cheat, they steal. In order to get their drug of choice or whatever it is that they're addicted to, whatever, often what's left behind is a trail of shattered relationships. In this situation, apologies don't do. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a 12-step program that I have seen be very effective, and I've also seen it be not effective for certain people, it calls for amends, a thing called amends, A-M-E-N-D-S. And they're mentioned specifically in several of the AA 12 steps, including Step 8, make a list of all persons you have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. Now, this is such an interesting concept. It's an interesting concept for you to think about you, your life, and the wreckage behind you. Because maybe if you've been addicted and you've been involved in certain things, maybe there is some wreckage, especially relationships. It could be children, it could be adults, it could be other relationships. So I was thinking, imagine if everybody made a list of amends. Now, the problem with making lists of amends is everybody believes they have hurt their mothers. Everybody believes that they have, and so, because mothers convince children that you're killing me, you see. I say it to you all the time, Mom, look at what you're doing to me, you're making me sick. Leaving out mothers, who is the victim of all children, imagine making a list of all the people in your life that you've ever harmed. And think about making amends to all of them. This eighth step of AA is step itself is such a powerful consideration that it frequently takes people months to just go through the consideration and the enacting of it. Now, step 9, which is the next step following that, is make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or injure others. So, for example, if you make an amend has to do with restoring justice as much as possible, and the idea is to restore in a direct way that which we have been broken or damaged, to make restoration. So let's say you've cheated somebody out of money, and you kind of say, oh, I just did it. I got away with it. Make amends, possible amends.
I know someone who made amends, and it was a financial thing. And the thing that's key about the ninth step is it's the accept when to injure those or others, would injure them or others. So often people make amends with money anonymously, so they do not incriminate themselves, but they still make the amends.
And not even incriminate themselves, so they don't necessarily get the credit, and they don't necessarily make the contact, and they're not looking for the reaction. But, you know, part of the reaction, part of making the amends, is allowing yourself to feel the shame for what you did.
And allowing the other person to tell you how it hurt.
Yeah, yeah, and standing with it. So doing it anonymously is kind of nice. You know, I could imagine if George Bush sent out some kind of checks to everybody in the country. Oh, they're doing that, aren't they? Aren't they sending $400 to everybody?
Not everybody.
Making amends, right. I got it. Okay, so let's say, for example, you borrowed $20 from me and you never paid it back. You go up and say, gee, I'm sorry I borrowed $20 and I spent it on drugs. That would be an apology. Making amends is giving the money back.
Without apologizing, you're amending the behavior. You're changing it.
What does step 9 suggest that people avoid direct amends in certain cases? Now, certain ones. You don't run home and say to your spouse, gee, honey, I had a wonderful time in addiction treatment. I learned all about rigorous honesty, so I want to apologize for you for an affair I had 5 years ago. Now, that's not part of it. That may be something you need to do, but this is not amends. That's clearing your conscience at the expense of someone else who's going to feel terrible. In this case, your amend can be an indirect one. Stop having affairs. Stop doing the behavior. Bring your heart, your energy, and your attention back to the person who you've left for whatever reason. Sometimes direct amends are impossible. For example, someone gets drunk, drives, and kills somebody in a traffic accident. That happens. You can't go back and unkill the person who died. Instead, you can fill out an organ donor card. You know, you could do something. There's an indirect amend that will give life back to someone in the future. Remember that with crimes such as drunk driving, people might need to go to court and take a punishment. I have known people who have had to turn themselves in for crimes to serve time so that they could feel they were cleaning themselves in some way. And I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, living as a criminal, living as someone who has hurt other people, and just spending your life with that somewhere behind your mind, be wonderful to be free of it. Are there other amends besides direct and indirect? Sometimes people talk about living amends. And this simply means that we live differently. Amends are about a genuine change in our behavior instead of the patchwork of an apology. We take on a whole new way of life. We stop accumulating fresh insults to ourselves and to others. We change. Now, what are the benefits of this? This becomes another thing. If we've continuously harmed people and haven't made any effort towards amend, then we've got a lot of people, places, and things to avoid. I know a man, I think I've told this story, who died. He was one of the most disliked people that you could imagine. Nobody liked him. So when he died, I did say this recently, I went to his funeral. And I went to his funeral and I saw people there and I said, well, you know, not many people liked him. I knew him for a long time. I said, why are you here? And they said, I'm here to make sure he's dead. He was such an evil guy. I just want to make sure he's dead. Imagine being that way. Imagine what it would be like to be at somebody at your funeral who just says to you, boy, am I glad you're gone. Am I glad that person's off the planet? Armand DeMille here with you. It's Stephanie Roth. We're talking about making amends. So if you've continuously harmed people, then you've got a lot of people, places, and things to avoid. And, you know, if you haven't made any efforts towards amends, there are things you don't want to hear about, people you don't want crawling up. You don't want to have a Facebook and know that somebody's going to find you and come in and talk about you. Large areas of life become closed off to you. If you're willing to make amends, the areas open up again, places where you thought you could never go. You can now go again. You don't have to avoid people anymore. And this is true not only for people in recovery, but for all of us. So the concept of making amends, my friend, is, I think there's a good phrase that I heard from someone said, if we are painstakingly about this phase of our development, it says we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the world's serenity, and we will eventually know peace.
Bill W. wrote that.
What?
That's written from Bill W., the founder
of
Alcoholics Anonymous.
Absolutely. So this is the idea, and although I believe that guilt and shame are part of the problem for most people that carry it around, there are other people who carry around a sense of, not guilt and shame, but a sense of, I have done wrong. And I want to fix it. So very often we have people who come in to see us who have been wronged. And there are people who have been, you know, they have had so many things wrong happen to them and they've taken it on themselves. As saying, oh, I'm the one who has created all this problem. We're not talking about that. We're talking about those of you who have kind of stampeded through life. Now, I'm going to tell you a kind of, if you want to know who you are, you're generally not the depressed person. You're the person who is a high energy, a type A personality. You're the kind of person who is like, you know, moved through and not cared too much about your victims. You know, you moved ahead of other people. I remember somebody telling a story. He was a young man who had a job, and he had a competitor at the job. And the competitor, while the guy was on vacation, not on vacation, he was on honeymoon, his competitor planted some false evidence about him in the guy's records, brought this evidence to the bosses. And the bosses looked at it, and while this guy was on his honeymoon, they had big meetings about it. This guy created the evidence. And what happened was when the guy came back from his honeymoon, age 23, just married, had a solid job, he got fired. He didn't even get a chance to defend himself. The bosses said the evidence is overwhelming. And they had like 40 pieces of paper that were all produced by this one guy. So then this man goes and he leaves, and he couldn't find a job for 7 months. His marriage falters. He loses a lot of money. But then he gets himself back on his feet and he becomes very successful. And guess what happens? He becomes successful and he becomes the head of an organization. And the very guy who did this to him, right, applies for a job. And applies for a job as if nothing ever happened. He applied for a job like, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, well, you really did well for yourself. And as if nothing ever took place. It was kind of an amazing thing. Bullies are like that. You know, when you're a child and people bully you, if you've been the victim of a bully for year after year, very often you'll find that the bully will think that you're their best friend. And the bully will say to you, if you meet them a year later, oh, didn't we have a great time as kids? So some people hurt people, and they hurt them so consciously and unconsciously, and yet they've shut off part of their brain so that they no longer can feel the connection, the association, the thing that would make them heal by being able to make amends. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. My guest has been Stephanie Roth, who can be reached through my organization. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You do great work with people. I love it. And we will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more exciting, exciting stuff. Oh, if you want to get in touch with me, you can go through, you can actually listen to today's program, thepositivemind.com. We have all the archives there, and you can contact us through that as well. Here's a little Tom Waits. She needs a way to turn around the bend. She said, I want to walk away and start over again. There are things I've done I can't erase. I want to look in the mirror, see another face. I said, never, but I'm doing it again. I want to walk away and start over again. No more rain. Shake my thirst in a cool, cool pond. There's a winner in every place. There's a heart that's beating in every page. The beginning of it starts at the end. When it's time to walk away and start over again. Weather's murder at 103. William Ray shot Corabelli. A yellow dog knows when he's seen. You want to walk away and start over again. No more rain, no more roses on our way. Shake my thirst in a cool, cool pond. Cooper told Molly the whole block's gone. They're down for jewelry, money, and clothes. I always get out of the trouble I'm in. I want to walk away and start over again. I left my Bible by the side of the road. My initials in an old dead tree. I'm going away, but I'm gonna be back when it's time to walk away and start over again. Oh, yeah.